The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello and welcome to our July 2020 edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately, a program from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons, all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in the program. But this program is all about books, with special emphasis on those available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. The library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well. The library has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. If you're not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information about that at the end of this program as well. This month, we'll take a look at some of the most popular books checked out within the past few months at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. We're going to begin the program today with one of the most popular novelists, Stuart Woods, and this is his most recent book that's called Hit List. At the start of Woods' 53rd Stone Barrington novel, the fabulously rich New York attorney Barrington discovers that his name is on a hit list of 10 people, one of whom is soon shot dead while skating at Rockefeller Center's ice rink. Now, everyone on the list was an employee at one time at Strategic Services, a private security firm. Except for Stone, though, he had done consulting work for the company. A disgruntled former Strategic Services employee, Sig Larkin, emerges as the lone suspect. Stone's efforts to elude Larkin take him to various places where he owns houses, including England, Maine, and Santa Fe, New Mexico. But Larkin, who has recently won a fortune in the lottery, is able to match Stone's jet-setting pace. Romantic interludes with a couple of willing women provide Stone some respite from the cartoonish action until the climactic showdown on motorcycles. The book's high spot is Stone's reunion at the end with longtime paramour Holly Barker, who's running for president, which promises potential personal complications next time. This entry amounts to an extended chase scene. It sounds like another good one from the very popular author Stuart Woods. It's called Hit List. Next, a look at a new book that is by an author who's very popular. We haven't read too many things about her on this program. It's Diane Chamberlain, and the book is called Big Lies in a Small Town. From New York Times bestselling author Chamberlain comes a novel of chilling intrigue, a decades-old disappearance, and one woman's quest to find the truth. North Carolina, 2018. Morgan Christopher's life has been derailed. Taking the fall for a crime she did not commit, her dream of a career in art is put on hold until a mysterious visitor makes her an offer that will get her released from prison immediately. Her assignment, restore an old post office mural in a sleepy southern town. Morgan knows nothing about art restoration, but desperate to be free, she accepts. What she finds under the layers of grime is a painting that tells the story of madness, violence, and conspiracy of small-town secrets. Now, back to North Carolina in 1940, Anna Dale, an artist from New Jersey, wins a national contest to paint a mural for the post office in Edenton, North Carolina. Alone in the world and in great need of work, she accepts the job. But what she doesn't expect is to find herself immersed in a town where prejudices run deep, where people are hiding secrets behind closed doors, and where the price of being different might just end in murder. What happened to Anna Dale? Are the clues hidden in the decrepit mural? Can Morgan overcome her own demons to discover what exists beneath the layers of lies? You'll have to listen to this book to hear the answer to those questions. The book is called Big Lies in a Small Town, and it's by Diane Chamberlain. Now let's move on to another book by J.D. Robb that we hear from a lot on the program here. It's called Golden in Death, an Eve Dallas novel by J.D. Robb. It is the spring of 2061, the 50th entry in J.D. Robb's futuristic mystery thriller series featuring Lieutenant Eve Dallas. Her husband Rourke and her support team opens as the New York Police and Security Department is called to a West Village apartment. Now, a local pediatrician, Kent Abner, has been found dead by his partner, Dr. Martin Rufty. On the floor are the remnants of a golden plastic egg. Eve immediately calls the hazmat team as it appears that some kind of unknown toxin has been released. It turns out that the murder weapon is a biochemical poison that is very fast-acting and leaves little trace. But why was the beloved doctor murdered? The investigation proves to be challenging, as he was so well-liked in the community. Soon, however, it becomes clear that whoever killed him had to have the special skills and access to the materials to create such a sophisticated formula. When a second murder with the same modus operandi occurs, Eve has to wonder if the crimes are linked. The common denominator turns out to be the Teresa A. Gold Academy. Abner's partner is the current headmaster, and the spouse of the latest victim worked there at one time. Eve's instincts lead her to conclude that the murderer is a cold, calculating assassin. He or she is not a professional, but probably is motivated by jealousy or revenge, maybe even both. As Eve and the gang investigate past students, former and current faculty, the administrators and even the board members, they uncover a cheating and bullying scandal. Although Dr. Rufty was brought in to address the academy's culture and standards, its past missteps certainly could have resulted in murder. But by whom? Eve, with the help of Rourke, Peabody, and the rest of her trusted team, identifies a possible suspect who may have been in cahoots with two others. Are there more potential victims who may be next in line for a golden egg? Well, Golden in Death is an intense, captivating, and well-paced thriller. Our tough yet likable protagonist and her mysterious yet formidable husband continue to grow and change, as does their relationship. The supporting characters create a sense of community that adds to the reader's experience and is a testament to Robb's unfailing talent as a master writer of story and series. This golden celebration of the 50th in-depth novel also resonates with relevance for today's world. And that, by the way, was a review by Jennifer McCord that was done in February of 2020. Once again, the name of that book is Golden in Death, and it's an Eve Dallas novel by J.D. Robb. And right now we're going to hear about a book called The Numbers Game, and it's by Danielle Steele. In Danielle Steele's stunning novel, modern relationships come together, fall apart, and are reinvented over time, proving that age is just a number. Eileen Jackson was happy to set aside her own dreams to raise a family with her husband, Paul. Together, they built an ordinary life in a Connecticut town, the perfect place for their kids to grow up. But When Eileen discovers that Paul's late nights in the city are hiding an affair with a younger woman, she begins to question all those years of sacrifice and compromise. On the brink of 40 and wondering what she's going to do with the rest of her life, is it too late for her to start over? Well, meanwhile, as Paul is thrust back into the role of suburban fatherhood, his girlfriend, Olivia, is in Manhattan, struggling to find herself in the shadow of her mother, a famous actress, and her grandmother, a fiercely independent 92-year-old artist. With their unique brands of advice ringing in her head, Olivia takes a major step, expanding her art gallery business internationally. Seeing her mother pursue old dreams and even find new love, Olivia realizes that there is so much she must learn about herself before committing her life to someone else. Ultimately, Eileen decides to chase her own dreams as well. She's off to Paris to attend the Cordon Bleu cooking school. What awaits is an adventure that reinvents her life and redefines her. At every age, there are challenges to be met and new worlds to discover. In this surprising, illuminating novel, Danielle Steele gives us a warm-hearted portrait of people driven by their emotions, life experiences, and loyalties, who realize that it's never too late to turn a new page and start again. Once again, that was a book called The Numbers Game, written by the very popular author Danielle Steele. Now I'm going to read for you a review of a book called Crooked River by Douglas J. Preston and Lincoln Child. The review was written by Ray Palin in February, just this year, 2020. I have always been a highly observant person of the world around me, says Palin. Some of this is due to the fact that I have been an actor since childhood, and part of that process includes being a student of life and using what you have seen, heard, and experienced in creating or finding your characters. What always intrigued me, he says, and in the back of his mind seemed like the perfect impetus for a horror or sci-fi novel, were the countless single discarded shoes that I would see along the side of various highways. Now, this made me think, well, how did that get there? And who would get rid of just one shoe? My mind would race to everything from alien abductions to other horrific causes. Unfortunately, my curiosity ended there, but those shoes always remained a great fodder for a future story. Well, not only did Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child have similar thoughts, they actually based Crooked River on a series of bizarre events that took place in British Columbia in 2007. I subscribe to their email newsletter, and the latest edition talks about it in great detail. A young girl found an Adidas shoe washed up while beachcombing and was horrified to find a severed human foot inside it. But it didn't end there, and actually the foot count reached 15. Some of the feet were matches for those previously found, but in most instances, miles apart from each other. Now, it seems only natural that two masters of psychological thriller plotting combined with an extensive research would tackle such an intriguing case, and who better to investigate it than the brilliantly enigmatic agent Pendergast? Well, the primary mystery at the heart of this terrific installment in this series revolves around a complex answer to a simple question. What could possibly make someone chop off their own foot? Crooked River itself is set in the middle of the large, uninhabited Tate's Hell State Park in rural Florida. Setting the narrative in motion is a fictional incident inspired by the horrific events in British Columbia. In this telling, we find Ward Pearsall, a young boy who is enjoying his beach vacation with his family on Captiva Island in Florida, when a sneaker washes up with the surf. Ward picks it up. Upon further inspection, which is followed by his sister's shrieks, he finds the remains of a human foot still inside it. Well, Chief P.B. Perelman of the local police department is on site almost immediately after the incident is reported. It will not be long until heavier hitters in law enforcement are called in, especially when the one shoe leads to the discovery of many more, with a final count tallied at 92. FBI Assistant Director Walter Pickett knows that the right person for this type of case is none other than the Special Agent Aloysius Pendergast. Now, since this is the 19th Pendergast novel, loyal readers instantly will feel comfortable when their literary hero is back for another adventure. This one, however, will prove to be too much for him to handle alone. Pendergast arrives with his ward, Constance Green, in tow, and is eager to jump into what initially looks like the most horrific case he has ever been handed. A task force is put together, combining local law enforcement with other government agencies, including the FBI. Immediately, the speculation begins in an attempt to try to understand how 92 shoes containing severed feet could become a reality. Some suggestions range from a doomsday cult to medical experimentation somewhere in Central America. Meanwhile, there are additional plot lines. One involves the house that Pendergast and Constance decide to rent while they are investigating. The place known locally as the Mortlock House was the site of a bloody murder, and rumors of hauntings have followed. There are also characters from prior novels in the series who play big roles here. One of them is feisty reporter Roger Smithback, who will get himself into some precarious situations with dangerous people in an effort to cover this baffling story. Another welcome return is Armstrong Cold Moon, a Native American FBI agent who worked on Pendergast's previous case. They make a good team. Cold Moon is able to bring enthusiasm and a keen eye, which balances well with Pendergast's methodical and intellectual approach. Chapter by chapter, we see this case move in several directions, and Pendergast will have to operate outside the boundaries of the law as he knows it. With that, of course, will come moments where he takes things a bit too far and lands in some hot water. The confrontation with those responsible for the horrors found within Crooked River is worth the price of admission, and Preston and Child find themselves with another surefire hit on their hands. This book was reviewed by Ray Palin in February of 2020, and once again it's called Crooked River by Douglas J. Preston and Lincoln Child. It sounds like a good one. And you're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately? An exclusive production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you're enjoying the program. Let's continue with a few more books. Next, In 5 Years, the name of this one by Rebecca Searle. Here is a synopsis of the story. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? When type A Manhattan lawyer Danny Cohen is asked this question at the most important interview of her career, she has a meticulously crafted answer at the ready. Later, after nailing her interview and accepting her boyfriend's marriage proposal, Danny goes to sleep knowing she is right on track to achieve her 5-year plan. But when she wakes up, she's suddenly in a different apartment, with a different ring on her finger, and beside a very different man. The television news is on in the background, and she can just make out the scrolling date. It's the same night, December 15th, but 2025, 5 years in the future. Well, after a very intense and shocking hour, Danny wakes again at the brink of midnight back in 2020. She can't shake what has happened. It certainly felt much more than merely a dream, but she isn't the kind of person who believes in visions. That nonsense is only charming, coming from free-spirited types like her lifelong best friend, Bella. Determined to ignore the odd experience, she files it away in the back of her mind. That is, until 4.5 years later, when by chance Danny meets the very same man from her long-ago vision. Brimming with joy and heartbreak, In 5 Years is an unforgettable love story that reminds us of the power of loyalty, friendship, and the unpredictable nature of destiny. That sounds like a very unusual book. It's called In 5 Years, and it's by Rebecca Searle. Now here's a book by an author I'm actually not too familiar with. You may be. Her name is Carrie Ann King. And this is a book entitled Whisper Me This. Here's the plot. Single mother Macy Addington has always fallen short of her own mother's expectations. Never married, a bit adrift, wasting her high IQ on dead-end jobs. The only thing Macy's sure she's gotten right is her relationship with her 12-year-old daughter, Elle. Until a phone call blows apart the precarious balance of their lives. Macy's mother is in a coma, and her aging father faces charges of abuse and neglect. Back at her childhood home, Macy must have a heart-rending life-or-death decision. Her confused father has destroyed family records, including her mother's final wishes. Searching for answers, Macy uncovers one unspeakable secret after another when she stumbles upon a shattering truth, a twin sister named Marley. Well, Macy's obsession with solving the mystery of her sister forces her to examine her darkest memories and triggers a custody battle with Elle's father. Will Macy's love for her daughter be strong enough to break a cycle of abuse and create a new beginning for them all? That's the story of this book. It's called Whisper Me This by Carrie Ann King. Now here's a book that has been on our list of popular books at least once before by the very popular James Patterson along with James O'Born. It is called Lost, and I think the last time I read about it on this program, we did a little more detailed plot. But this time, because we have read it before, I'm going to give you a summary. But it is a hot one and very popular at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. Here's the plot. Detective Tom Moon and his multi-talented team face off against an international crime ring looking to seize control of America's most vibrant city, Miami. Now, the city of Miami is Detective Tom Moon's backyard. He's always kept it local, attending University of Miami on a football scholarship, and as a Miami PD officer, protecting the city's most vulnerable. Well, now, as the new leader of an FBI task force called Operation Guardian, it's his mission to combat international crime. Moon's investigative team discovers that the opportunistic blood brothers, Russian nationals Roman and Emil Rostov, have evaded authorities while building a vast, powerful, and deadly crime syndicate throughout Europe and metropolitan Miami as well. Moon played offense for U of M, the University of Miami, but he's on the other side of the field this time. And as the Rostovs zero in on a target dear to Tom, they're not playing by anyone's rules, that's for sure. This is a book called Lost, very popular book by James Patterson, co-written with James O'Born. Now let's talk about a book by a popular author, Dean Koontz. This is one in the series of Jane Hawke novels. It's called The Forbidden Door. It's the fourth in the Jane Hawke series by Dean Koontz. When this relentless rogue FBI agent comes knocking, her adversaries will have to answer with their lives in this latest thrilling Jane Hawke novel by number one New York Times bestseller, author of The Silent Corner. Perhaps you read or heard that one. Here's a quote. "We're rewriting the play, and the play is this country, the world, the future. We break Jane's heart. We'll also break her will." She was one of the FBI's top agents until she became the nation's most wanted fugitive. Now, Jane Hawke may be all that stands between a free nation and its enslavement by a powerful secret society's terrifying mind-control technology. She couldn't save her husband or the others whose lives have been destroyed, but equipped with superior tactical and survival skills and the fury born of a broken heart and a hunger for justice, Jane has struck major blows against the insidious cabal. But Jane's enemies are about to hit back hard. If their best operatives can't outrun her, they mean to bring her running to them, using their 5-year-old son as a bait. Well, Jane knows there's no underestimating their capabilities, but she must battle her way across the country to the remote shelter where her boy is safely hidden, at least for now. As she moves resolutely forward, new threats begin to emerge. A growing number of brain-altered victims driven hopelessly, violently insane. With the madness spreading like a virus, the war between Jane and her enemies will become a fight for all their lives against the lethal terror unleashed from behind the forbidden door. And that's the name of this book, The Forbidden Door. It is the fourth in the very popular Jane Hawke series by Dean Koontz. And time for one more quick one, Wild Card by Stuart Woods. Stone Barrington and his latest paramour are enjoying a peaceful country retreat when their idol is broken by an unwelcome stranger. He was sent by an enemy, someone who'd be happy to silence Stone and all his collaborators for good, only it's soon clear that Stone is not an easy man to target. But with boundless resources and a thirst for vengeance, this foe will not be deterred, and when one plot fails, another materializes. The latest plan is more ambitious and subtle than any they've tried before, and the consequences could remake the nation. With the country's future in the balance, Stone Barrington will need to muster all his savvy and daring to defeat this rival once and for all. Another great Stuart Woods Barrington novel for you. It's called Wild Card. And that's all the time we have for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the North Carolina Library for the Blind, simply Google or search North Carolina Library for the Blind, or you can call toll-free 888-388-2460. That's 388-2460. You can also use these same numbers and website to join the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. It's that wonderful organization that sponsors this monthly feature on books. This program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time.